I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck.
And you're listening to the best of More to Life. Today on More to Life, trust me? We'll help you deal with those hard-to-trust people in your life. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. Everyone says they want to have a great marriage and family and personal life. Well, the theology of the body reveals how you can actually achieve it.
More to life.
The happiest couples know how to say I do to each other every moment of every day.
Surprising, relevant, hopeful.
Angela, let's not just settle for stopping your son's behavior.
Exactly. Let's talk about the kind of young man you want to raise.
Practical, theology of the body-based answers for every part of your life.
God's original blueprint didn't include depression and anxiety.
Yeah, that's a human invention. God wants to set you free. Let's talk about making that happen.
The life you were meant to live through the theology of the body. More to life.
Good morning, everyone. You are listening to More to Life on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
I'm Lisa Popcheck.
And today on More to Life, trust me, we're talking about those hard-to-trust people in your life. Are there certain people that you care about but are hard to trust for some reason? Maybe there are certain people who've hurt you, and you're struggling to know whether you can trust them again. For that matter, how do you know who you can trust in the first place? And what does it really mean to know or say that someone is worthy of trust? We're taking a look at all of those questions and more today on More to Life. Give us a call. Let's talk about those matters of trust in your life. 877-573-7825. Again, that number, 877-573-7825.
You know, some of us kind of move on automatic pilot, where we trust anybody until they prove to us time and again that they can't be trusted, and then we're sort of shocked by the whole thing, because we really want to just love people and trust them and believe they have everybody's best interest at heart. But sometimes we should not be so ready to just jump in and just trust anybody. It's important to really guard our hearts, guard our minds, guard our families from knowing who we can trust and who we can't. Other people, though, we feel like they should be trustworthy by default, by their title. Parent, sibling, child, spouse, good friend that we've known since we were three. And we think, of course we can trust them. But then things happen. And it could be huge, earth-shattering things. But it could just be the little things. Like you find out that they were saying something about you to somebody else and broke a confidence. Or said something in a way that has hurt you. Or you can't trust them to follow through when they tell you they're going to do something, even meeting for coffee. And you begin to realize that this trust, this carte blanche you've given them to your heart and your life, maybe shouldn't be quite as giving as you're giving.
Well, of course, the flip side of that are people who have been hurt, and so they are reluctant to trust anyone. But I think the thing to keep in mind, maybe right out of the chute here, is that we should resist that temptation to polarize the question of trust and make it either I trust you completely or I can't trust you at all.
Yes.
You know, trust is something that is more on a sliding scale, if you will. You know, that you can trust everybody to some degree. But there are some people that you can trust more than others based on certain criteria that we're going to talk about throughout the course of this program. You'll be, by the end of the show, it's our goal that you'll be able to have a clearer sense of not just who you can trust, but how far you can trust them. And where do you need to set those boundaries, or what do you need to do to develop the relationship so that you can have more trust in your life and feel more secure knowing who to trust and how far?
Well, I really want to emphasize that. It's about not just feeling secure in a way that says, well, I'm going to feel secure by cowering over here in this corner and not letting this person hurt me. It's about saying, I'm coming from a place of real strength where I can feel right inside about my relationship with this person. Mm-hmm. I can come from a place of strength and not have to be angry, not have to be frightened, not have to be defending the battlements of my, you know, borders that I put up between me and this person, not having to run away, but really just saying, I know where I can be with this person and where I can't, and I can feel right and good about the judgments I make and how I'm living with this person, whether that's people we share our home with or people we have to deal with in the day-to-day out in the world.
No, that's an excellent point. I want to build on it. But first, our number, 877-573-7825. Are there people in your life that you're struggling to know whether to trust or if you can trust them again? What does it really mean to trust somebody? How far can you trust somebody? Those are all questions we're looking at today on More to Life. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. But I want to go back to the point that you were making, that this is something that surprises a lot of people, I think, that our ability to trust others or know whether we can trust others or not has more to do, honestly, with our ability to trust ourselves than it has to do with other people. Why? Because trust ultimately comes down to knowing that I can handle myself in different relationships, that I know that I am confident in my ability to know who a safe person is and who they aren't, to know that I can set boundaries if I have to know how far I can be vulnerable in a particular situation. In order for me to feel confident in trusting others, I need to be able to trust myself, to be able to make good decisions about how vulnerable I can be around certain people, about my ability to set boundaries that other people will respect.
Without feeling guilty.
Exactly.
Without being terrified of, you know, their reaction to those boundaries. And just to feel, as I said, right within ourselves.
That's right.
About where we stand with other people. And that's across the continuum of the people in our lives. And you don't, even if you know, so let's put it this way. Even if you're saying, yeah, I can trust adults, but these little kids that I have to raise, I can't trust them because, you know, they're little. Well, we'll show you how you can trust to the degree that you're teaching to be trustworthy.
If you're saying that, though, what that really means is I don't have the confidence in myself to know how to address these behaviors in an effective way. I mean, again, you know, so when people say, you know, I don't know who I can trust, what they're really saying is I don't have confidence in myself to make good decisions about how to respond to this person's behavior.
And we're not saying that's something bad about you.
No.
We're saying that's a skill we all have to build. Because we do come as we grow up into adults, we come from a place in our childhood where we've had to trust people. Often, unfortunately, that trust is betrayed through childhood. We all carry a lot of wounds from that. But we have to come from a place of, we have to trust somebody's going to feed us. We have to trust somebody's going to clothe us. We have to trust somebody's going to pick us up at school, and on and on and on. And so we bring that into adulthood, and then when we begin to realize that some people have capabilities and some people don't, we feel like there must be something wrong if we don't trust as openly as we did with kids. It's not wrong. It's a skill we really have to learn able to do successfully.
And being able to say that, you know, your ability to trust others relies on your ability to trust yourself to make good decisions about your ability to respond to other people's behavior isn't about blaming. It's like you said, it's about building that skill and recognize it's empowering, because if that power rests with you to make those decisions, then you don't have to worry about being a victim to other people. You're just confident in your ability to make these things happen. You know, looking at this whole question of trust from the perspective of the theology of the body, you know, TOB reminds us that we're made for love, and that our greatest mission in life is to build and actively participate in a community of love. Well, trust makes that possible. Trust is the quality that allows us to count on other people to be consistently loving, that is, working for our good, not just when they feel like it or when it's easy, but every day, unconditionally. Trust is the evidence that a person has the ability to do what they say they're going to do, the desire to consistently work for our good, and the integrity to correct themselves, or at least be easily corrected, when they occasionally behave unlovingly. You know, a lack of trust really makes it impossible to build the kind of authentically loving relationship we're called to build with others, because, well, we can't count on them to be consistently loving and display that attitude from one moment to the next. So trust is really that quality that allows us to focus on giving ourselves to each other instead of having to protect ourselves from each other. 877-573-7825. Give us a call and tell us, are there people in your life that you're struggling to know whether you can trust or whether you should trust again? Let's talk it out. 877-573-7825. With that, let's take our concerns to the Lord. We'll start taking your calls. In the name of the
Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Lord Jesus Christ, we come into your presence and we thank you for spending this time with us and all the good people who are tuning in right now. And Lord, we bring to you all of those relationships where we are struggling with trust. Those times when we're struggling to know what it means to trust somebody in the first place, how far to trust someone. Help us to know how to rebuild relationships where trust has been damaged. We can always trust in you, but we even struggle with that sometimes, Lord. Help us to have the wisdom to know what it takes to really trust somebody and how to have those kinds of trusting relationships that allow us to participate in the community of love that your servant Pope St. John Paul the Great reminded us was our privilege and our responsibility to create, so that we can truly glorify you in all of our relationships. We ask all this through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Pope St. John Paul the Great,
pray for us.
Today on Mortal Life, trust me, we're helping you deal with those hard-to-trust people in your life. Is there someone that's hard to trust, or hard to know whether you can trust them again? Sometimes damaged trust is the hardest thing to heal. 877-573-7825. Again, that number, 877-573-7825.
We're talking now with Julie, who's listening to EWTN Radio in San Antonio, Texas, on Guadalupe Radio.
Hi there, Julie. Welcome to More to Life. What can we do for you?
Hi. I was telling your call-in person about my mom and my dad. I had a baby last August, and we're in the military, so we're a distance away from our family. And I called my mom and I asked her to come out and help when the baby was born. And she brought my brother with her, and that was a surprise to me because I do not have a very good relationship with him at all.
And how old is your brother?
How old is he?
I am 28, and he turned 32.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's not like she had to bring a minor child with her. She brought your 30-year-old brother. Okay.
Right. He's an adult. And they were only there for 2 days, and I was getting so stressed out because she was catering to him and not cleaning up, not helping out, or anything like that. So I also have a 4-year-old, so I'm getting stressed out because now I have 2 extra people in my home who are not helping. And my husband ended up having to ask them to leave because he realized how stressed out I was getting. So I called my family right after they left, and I said, something is wrong. What is going on? And come to find out, he has a really bad drug problem. And my mom brought him into my house when I had a baby. I asked her to help me, so my trust is broken, and I don't know how to get it back. We've been dealing with this for almost a year, and she won't talk to me about it. She thinks that I live on a high horse because I've taken a stand of, you know, distance for one. And two, we have expectations that need to be met when they come visit us. And so my mom and my dad both, they don't want to talk about this situation, and they don't want to acknowledge that my brother has a problem. My mom enables him, so we have opted not to even stay at their house anymore because he lives with them. So it's just, it's turning into
well, when you say, I mean, honestly, yeah. As painful as this is, and my heart really breaks for you, because we all want our parents' support, and you deserve your parents' support, and sometimes it's not forthcoming, and that's really incredibly painful. But having said that, you know, when you say, you know, you can't get the trust back, I mean, I think you're setting appropriate limits here. When you say you're struggling with this, what would you like to know? Are you asking if you're doing the right thing by setting these limits? Or are you asking, you know, what do you need to do to try to move this forward? How can we help you today?
Yes. I think I just want to know how to move it forward. How do I get them to talk about it? And how do I get them to just communicate to mm-hmm. my husband and I that they're trying to make their living situation better?
Yeah. Okay, well, here's the thing. I mean, they're disinclined to do that because that's going to require a real major shift in the way they think. Like you said, they're enabling your brother in his drug problem.
And I guarantee that right now, based on the fact that she brought your 30-year-old brother to your house when she was supposed to be helping you out, your mother's whole way of coping with this is, if I watch him all the time like he was a 3-year-old, I can keep him away from drugs and baby him and love him enough that this won't have a hold on his life anymore, and everything will be fine. He'll be okay. And we all know that's not the truth.
Well, on top of that,
that's what she's believing.
Their way of dealing with conflict is to pretend it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So, you know, when you say, how can I get them to want to talk about this? I mean, they're disinclined to do that. So that you got an uphill battle there. The only way to get someone to talk about something that they don't want to talk about is to make it cost enough for them to want to talk about it. So, in other words, you keep up the limits that you've got, because as painful as they are, you've got a door that's open. You're saying, okay, look, guys, I would love to have you in my life. We want your support. We want you to be part of your grandchildren's lives. But in order to do that, here's what we need from you. You know, X, Y, and Z. And you've done that. You need to hold that limit, because what they're going to try to do is convince you that you're crazy and wrong for having those limits.
Including just heaping on the guilt, saying, oh, well, as they said, you live on this high horse, you should change, you know, they're just trying to make you feel guilty enough that you cave in. You can't do that.
No, so the best way to get them to come to the table and talk with you is by saying, you know, I'm really sorry you feel that way, but you're not going to have a relationship with us or the grandkids until you sit down and deal with this stuff, and it's really up to you to decide whether that's okay with you or not. So when they really get that you're serious about this and that you're not going to compromise on those limits that you've set, then they might be willing to come and sit down with you, but not before. If you seem like you're wavering at all, if you come off as guilty at all, if you try to convince them to see things your way, then all of that's going to work against you. The best way to do this is to be very clear and firm that, Mom, Dad, I'm really sorry you're struggling with this, really sorry you feel that way, but this is the way it is, and you guys either have to deal with that, or it's going to break our hearts, but you're not going to see us or the grandkids as much as you'd like to.
Now, Julie, there's something I really, really encourage you to do here, because I get this. You're having your babies. You want your mama. Everybody does. I can't tell you how many times my mother has passed. I can't tell you how many times I'm in the middle of an overwhelming day, and I'm thinking, I just want my mom to come and help. I get it. Please take some time to write down exactly why you're setting these limits. A, you can't possibly have your brother on base. That could jeopardize your husband's career. B, this is terrible for your brother. So setting these limits may help in some way to have a crack in this whole thing and get him the help he needs. C, you can't have them around your kids. It would be really dangerous for your children. D, it's bad for your mental health. There are more reasons that I could enumerate if I had more time. I want you to do it and write it down. So on those days when your resolve is waning, you take out this piece of paper and you remind yourself that by having this list, by setting these limits, you're working for the good of everybody you love. And you have to stick with them. It's the only way to keep that resolve up, but it is the right thing you're doing.
Yeah, terrific way to follow up on that. Julie, thank you so much for the call. We are taking your calls today, folks, about those people that you are struggling to know how to trust or whether to trust again. Give us a holler at 877-573-7825. And More to Life. We'll be back with more of your calls, questions, and comments about trust after the break.
This is Father Leo Paddlinghug, and why do we need Catholic radio? Well, the answer is simple. The devil, who is very real, uses all forms of communication. And so if we are to understand our purpose in life, it's to make sure that we are not only proclaiming the good news, we're also listening to the good news. And how do you do that? With Catholic Radio.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck.
And you're listening to the best of More to Life.
Welcome back. We're so glad to be with you today on More to Life on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Lisa Popcheck.
I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, and we are talking with you today about trust on our show titled, Trust Me? We're helping you deal with all those people in your life that are hard to trust, or those situations where it's difficult to know how much you can trust somebody, or for that matter, how to rebuild broken trust. If you've got questions about trust, well, we've got the answers for you. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. Again, that number, 877-573-7825.
We're talking now with Margaret, who's listening to EWTN Radio in Dallas, Texas, on Guadalupe Radio.
Hey there, Margaret. Thanks for calling in. What can we do for you?
I read that Hatchman's book, and I found out I'm the disorganized attachment model, and my husband's the avoidant. Anyways, we've been married 35 years, and because he was in the military and I had lots of children I stayed at home and raised, and he was overseas a lot, I just threw myself into raising the children. And he's a good guy, but like I said, he's avoidant. He's not emotional, and I've been asking him, I just don't want to give up. After reading the five love languages, I said, I need words of verbal affirmation, and this has been going on for several months. And for a couple weeks, he was good about it, and then for weeks, I'll get nothing from him, not even a sentence, and I'll, you know, and I keep saying, how hard is it to give me one sentence a day? And I just don't know what to is there anything further I can do? I mean, somebody said set consequences. I have no idea what kind of consequences to set.
No, no, no. You don't want to use consequences.
I hear what you're saying. You know, you're going to say, I just want to kind of give people an analogy for how hard is it to ... when you're not wired to do that, right? So think about the thing that you know is good for you, but it's the hardest thing to do. You know, how hard is it to, fill in the blank, exercise for half an hour every single day? Can you do that consistently? Stop eating carbs. Call your mother. Whatever it is that you find, you're saying, I should, but it's just not part of who you are. Yeah. It's hard to stay consistent. You might exercise every single day for a week or a month, or and then you get a cold or something happens and it goes by the wayside again. That's a lot like what your husband's dealing with because of his attachment style.
Well, yeah, that and on top of that, you know, I like the love language stuff. It's useful in its way, but the problem there is it gives the impression sometimes that you can just tell somebody, hey, I need you to do this, and then, oh, well, of course, now they know, they're going to go do that. In For Better Forever, a Catholic Guide to Lifelong Marriage, we talk a little bit about these love languages, we call them love styles in there, and what you don't appreciate very often is that it actually requires you to rewire your brain. You know, you're talking about a very different way of thinking, right? So when you're talking about your husband having this more avoidant attachment style, you know, if that's true, he has a hard time kind of getting relationship in general. You know, he was sort of raised in a household that attended to his physical needs, but really kind of left him on his own for his emotional needs. It doesn't occur to him. He's literally not wired to think that I need to do this. And that's okay. You know, he can learn. But in order to do that, there has to be a structure. You can't just tell him, oh, I need this, and then expect it to happen any more than you could just tell somebody who didn't know how to walk, hey, I need you to run a marathon, and then they could do it, right, tomorrow. So what you need to do is create a ritual. And this is where these rituals of connection that we keep beating the drum about on this show every day come into play. You need a talk ritual, a time to sit down every day and talk with each other about something other than what needs to be picked up at the store, or who needs to be taken where, or whatever. Have a ritual where you actually talk about, you know, how you feel about each other and how you're taking care of each other and what more you might need to do to help make each other's lives a little easier or more pleasant. You create 15 minutes a day where you just sit down together and you talk about the thing that you appreciated most that you did for each other that day.
You put it on the schedule. You encourage him to do it. You don't make it a test. Oh, he didn't remember our 15 minutes today.
No, you just sit down together every day and make it happen.
Every day.
And, you know, whether that's after dinner or before bed or whatever, you just put it on the schedule that this is our time to have our relationship talk time together. And you create that ritual where you share those things. We talk about how to create those sorts of rituals in How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love. Check it out. But it's going to require that kind of ritual that allows you to check in with each other every day to have the kind of conversation you're looking for and give him the time to build up those mental relationship muscles. Stick around.
Why would God permit the devil to tempt his son in the desert? The symbolism behind those temptations, as provided by the Catholic Catechism, gives great insight into God's rationale. Jesus, driven by the Spirit, goes into the desert to live in solitude for 40 days. At the close of that period of prayer and fasting, the devil arrives to attempt to compromise Jesus' filial devotion to God, his Father. Satan tempts Jesus three times, and Jesus rebuffs him three times. This is a recapitulation of Satan's seduction of Adam. Only this time, he loses to the new Adam. It is also a recapitulation of Israel in the desert when the Hebrews provoked God during their 40-year sojourn. In contrast, Jesus is totally obedient to his Father's will. Jesus' victory over temptation is a prelude to his victory over sin on the cross. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
People have this false notion that after the Supreme Court came out with, of course, Roe v. Wade and gave us abortion on demand through 9 months of pregnancy, all of a sudden, all of these regulations were put into place. When all of these independent abortion facilities popped up all over the country, when Planned Parenthood started opening its doors and doing abortions legally after 1973, that it was always so safe and wonderful. And they believe this because they don't see these stories about the botched abortions, the women who have lost their lives, the women who have been violated because their information has been tossed out in the street with the garbage and the medical waste. Not to mention the fact that the regulations that are on the books are not even enforced, and rarely are these facilities inspected, and yet people think that they're so safe.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck.
And you're listening to the best of More to Life. Hi, this is Dr. Greg Popcheck. Discipline is a difficult question to navigate in today's culture. Many parents don't like the idea of corporal punishment, but fear spoiling their children as well. Luckily, the Church has long provided guidance for parents on this subject. In fact, some well-known saints have specifically preached against corporal punishment. St. John Chrysostom wrote, "Accustom your children not to be trained by the rod, for when he feels it, he will learn to despise it. And when he has learned to despise it, he has reduced your system to naught." St. John Bosco wrote, "Force indeed punishes the guilt, but does not heal the guilty. To strike a child in any way must be avoided." Psychology, brain science, and our Catholic faith agree that parents should assume the best, gently correct the wrongdoing, and redirect the child toward more positive behavior.
Avoiding force will continue a relationship of trust and mutual respect between you and your child. For more guidance on Catholic parenting, visit moretoliferadio.com.
Can you trust certain people in your life? Should you? And if you know that you don't feel certain about that, what do you do about it? And still give glory to God through it all and witness to His love in that person's life. Trust is difficult. Trust as a Christian can even get more complicated. We're here to help you work it out today. This is More to Life. I'm Lisa Popchak.
And I'm Dr. Greg Popchak. Give us a call at 877-573-7825, and let's talk about those questions of trust. Are there people in your life who are hard to trust? Are there certain people who've hurt you and broken your trust? How do you know whether you can trust in the first place, and what does that even really mean? Let's talk it all out. 877-573-7825.
We're talking now with Anna, who's listening on Sirius 130.
Hey, Anna. Welcome to More to Life. What's up?
Hi, how are you guys?
Doing great, thanks. What's your question for us?
Good. Well, I'm trying to give my sister advice on how she gives her trust to her husband, who has a drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And he always promises, oh, I'll go to rehab, I'll get better. And she gives him the benefit of the doubt, but he always has a withdrawal. This is going on for, I want to say, almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you stop trusting him, or does she still need to give him that support?
Well, she does need to give him support, but a different kind of support than she's giving. I mean, what you're describing is kind of typical codependent behavior. Codependency, mm-hmm. People throw that word around, but basically what it means is, in a relationship with an addict, there are certain things we do that we feel inside are helpful, but that ultimately end mm-hmm. up contributing to that person's addiction. And essentially, mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult to kick an addiction. I mean, just think about how hard it is to, lose weight or to start to exercise, and then multiply that by about 100. And then you've got a sense of what it's like to give up an addiction. So the addict is not motivated at all to change, right? The only reason they're going to change is because the people around them have made it abundantly clear that unless they make a change, their life is going to get very, very, very complicated. And that requires your people like your sister to be able to set a very clear and firm boundary. But, when she does this, and what you're calling trust, it's basically a misplaced trust, it's a codependency, she gives him the benefit of the doubt when she absolutely shouldn't. So the key here, really, Anna, is in encouraging your sister to get help. First, she needs to be going to a group like Al-Anon or Narcanon, which is a group for family members of the addict, to help them get the support they need to learn to set appropriate limits. She probably should benefit from some individual therapy as well. And when I say that, I would really encourage her to seek individual therapy from a marriage-friendly therapist, because even if you're not doing marriage counseling, and you really can't do marriage counseling mm-hmm. with an addict, that individual counseling should be in the context of trying to keep the marriage in mind, right? And because a lot of individual therapists, you're married to an addict, you just get out of there.
Yeah, they all set a hard, a hardcore situation here and get out, get yourself safe. It's not necessarily the way that has to go.
Well, and on top of that, it's not necessarily healthy for your sister, because then she just ends up in another addictive relationship with somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. So being able to learn how to set the appropriate limits she needs to set is important for her mental health and relationship health down the road, as well as for her husband. So the first step here isn't so much focusing on your brother-in-law and getting him the help that he needs. He's not going to successfully complete rehab until your sister is sort of on the right track in terms of her own ability to set appropriate limits and hold to those limits and stop extending this quote-unquote trust that she's giving to her husband, which is really codependency. So I really encourage you to recommend either local Al-Anon or Narcanon groups, and also some individual therapy with a good marriage-friendly therapist that can help her understand that the most loving thing you can do for an addict is set limits with them, because loving somebody means working for their good. Enabling them is not loving at all, because you're actually contributing to their destruction and their self-destructive tendencies. So, you know, Anna, if you want to help her out, maybe try to find some local groups in her area that you can say, hey, I found out that, you know, Narcanon is meeting in this church basement, or Al-Anon is meeting in this area over here on Wednesdays
and if you
and
live close enough, you can even say, hey, I'll drive you, and after your meeting, we can go out for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of support is fine and encouraged. If you don't live close enough, at least find out when the meetings are and keep pushing toward her healing rather than addressing anything with him, because as soon as you do, she's going to double down and get protective of him.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing, too. A lot of times, a codependent person will call up their sister or their best friend and complain about what a horrible person their husband is. And then because they vented, they feel like, oh, that, I've gotten that off my chest, so now I don't have to do anything about it. So if she calls you and wants to complain about her husband, the best thing you can do is redirect it back to her and say, yeah, honey, I'm sorry you're going through that, but what are you going to do differently? And here are the resources that could help you do it differently. When you're ready to do that, give me a call. And by redirecting her to her own behavior, that keeps the pressure where it needs to be so she can do something about it instead of just calling you, venting, feeling better. Wash, rinse, repeat. All right, Anna, thanks so much for the call. 877-573-7825. We're talking with you about trust today on More to Life. Give us a call. Let's talk about those people that are hard to trust, those situations where it's difficult to know whether to trust again, those times when you're not quite sure whether or how to rebuild broken trust. We are here for you today on More to Life. 877-573-7825. Again, that's 877-573-7825.
We're talking right now with Martha, who's listening to EWTN Radio in Houston, Texas, on Guadalupe Radio.
Hey there, Martha. Welcome to Born to Life.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
My question is, I'm going to make a long story short. I've been married for 16 years, and for the past 3 years, we've been... you know, everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong in my family. My husband lost a job, you know, problems with our teenage daughter. So it's been a lot of problems and a lot of pressure in our marriage. So it's been very broken, and I don't think he has made the right decisions. So he has always been a good man, and I trust him, but...
Well, Martha, wait, I'm sorry. When you say that he hasn't always made the right decisions, because it says on the board here, it says that your husband is asking you if you trust him, and you're not sure that you can because of decisions that he's made. What sorts of decisions has he made that call your ability to trust him into question?
Well, I mean, we lost everything. Taking care of our daughter, their relationship is broken because she has made wrong decisions, and he has reacted in the wrong way. So they're not talking, and I have been having to work all this time to support the family, and he's just looking for a job. He doesn't find anything, so it's just, you know, complicated. And he asked me if I trust him, and it's complicated. You know, I don't want to tell him I don't trust him 100%, but I don't trust him like I used to.
Well, all right, here's the thing. I mean, I think, you know, this is a good example an opportunity maybe to talk about what trust actually means, okay? So trust requires four qualities, right? Number one, it requires the ability to follow through on what you say you're going to do, okay? Number two, it requires the integrity to work hard to avoid hurting other people, or, you know, to be easily corrected if you do hurt somebody, because we all step on others' toes from time to time, even without meaning it. But if you're trustworthy, when somebody says, hey, that hurt, you say, oh, gosh, I'm sorry, and then you fix it, right? So you have integrity. So you have the ability to follow through, the integrity to try not to give offense in the first place or be easily corrected if you do. The benevolence, number three, to really see that I'm working for your good all the time, even when it's inconvenient for me. And then number four, the consistency. You can count on me to do those other three things. You know, everybody follows through once in a while. Everybody, you know, tries not to give offense once in a while. Everybody does something nice for other people once in a while. But are you consistent with it? Can you count on me, right? And what you're really saying here is that I don't know that I can trust my husband to have the ability to follow through on what he says he's going to do. You know, he's been out of work for a while. He says he's looking for a job, but he's not getting something. You know, his relationship with our daughter is broken, and I don't see him doing those things. You know, and then whenever he says, well, do you trust me? He's like, well, I can't trust you because you're not following through as well as you need to show me that you're making good on things. So that's why you're struggling to trust, because at least one of the four qualities that's essential for trust isn't there. So, Martha, what I'm going to say to you is something similar to what I said to Margaret earlier on. You know, when somebody is asking you to trust them again, that's not a magic thing. You have to say, well, I can trust you if I see you cooperating with this structure that allows me to trust you.
So you start putting things into place and you say, honey, you know what? I'm glad you've picked up on this. I am a little reticent in these areas. So to really build our trust back up, I need this. I need, for example, us to be in family therapy so we can heal this situation with our daughter. I need for us to be working with an accountant or financial professional who can help us come up with a budget and stick to it. I need to be sitting down with you at least once a week, going over your resume and making sure you have a list of things to apply to this week. Whatever it is that you need to put structures around what he's unable to do for himself.
And this is not about, and this shouldn't play out like you being his mommy dragging him through these things.
Very
either,
important point.
Which goes to the integrity point, right?
Very important
point. Like, it's fine for you to propose these ideas
and tell him what you need to help trust him.
And if he has integrity, then he would say, you know what, those are really good ideas. That's hard for me, but let's do that. Okay? If he doesn't have integrity, then he's going to fight you tooth and nail. Well, you know, you're trying to be like my mother, and he's not going to bring anything to the table, and he's going to make you drag him through it, which then says, oh, so now he doesn't just not display ability, he also isn't displaying integrity, too. So you see, Martha, it's all about creating that structure together and then seeing how he is willing to participate in that structure to earn that trust back and show you that he is trustworthy. We all mess up. That's, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, I can only trust people who never make mistakes. It's really about how I can trust people who make mistakes if they own responsibility for those mistakes and work with me to create structures that prevent those mistakes from happening again, right? So you want to go to him and say all those things that Lisa just said. I need X, Y, and Z, and I need, you know, and one of the, and Z is, I need you to give me some ideas too for how we're going to work on this together. And the more you see he's working on it, the more you'll be able to trust him. But if he just kind of magically pops up once in a while and say, do you trust me? Well, no, I can't, because what are we doing that's different? You know, it's ridiculous to even ask that question. So if you want to figure out, Martha, how to rebuild this trust in this area and how to follow through on the recommendations that we're talking about, God help me, these people are driving me nuts. Making Peace with Difficult People is a great resource for you, as well as our book, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love. But definitely, you know, the things that Lisa was recommending about family counseling and getting some good financial planning advice, sitting down for a weekly budget meeting and those kinds of things, absolutely critical to rebuilding the trust that's been lost because of these financial and family issues. 877-573-7825. Who are you struggling to trust? Is there someone who has hurt you and you're not sure how to rebuild that trust? Do you struggle with the question of trust in the first place, either because you give away too much or you're too afraid to let people in? Either way, we want to help you out. 877-573-7825. Again, that number, 877-573-7825. Stick around. More to Life. We'll be back with more of your calls after this.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. The reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian Prayer Series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Do you struggle to know who you can trust, or how far you can trust him, or for that matter, how to rebuild broken trust? We are here for you. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. You're listening to More to Life on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
I'm Lisa Popchak.
And with that, let's go to our next caller. Lisa, who's up?
We're talking with Gracie, who's listening to EWTN Radio in Houston, Texas, on the EWTN app.
Hi there, Gracie. What can we do for you? Gracie, are you there? Gracie in Houston going once. Nope.
Don't seem to have
Gracie. Hey, there she is.
Under the wire. Hi, Gracie. What can we do for you today?
Oh, good morning. I really like your show. I try to listen as much as possible. And today's theme really, you know, resonated with me because I'm going through a struggle that's been recurring with my husband regarding his viewing of pornography, which may or may not be an addiction. We don't know, or at least I don't know. We are in the process of getting some help, but I really don't know if I'll be able to trust him again and how that would play out.
Okay. When you say you're in the process of getting help, what does that process entail exactly?
Well, we're gonna start out and we're gonna go see a deacon, possibly the priest, and I don't know really where else to start.
Okay, well, I'm glad you called. And it's good to get some spiritual counsel, but I want you to understand, there's a difference between talking to your pastor or your deacon and getting professional counseling help. Because people really struggle with this because they think, well, what's the difference if I'm talking to this person or if I'm talking to that person?
So you should definitely have your husband go to your priest and receive the sacrament of reconciliation to start from there. But those two people are not likely to have the training and the resources to help your husband overcome this.
All right, so you want to be working with a marriage-friendly therapist who can help you recover from this, because rebuilding trust after using pornography is very much like rebuilding trust after an affair. And so you want to be able to work with somebody who's got experience in that, in rebuilding marriages after some kind of infidelity, whether that's due to pornography or infidelity. That faith in your spouse is broken, and working with a good marriage-friendly therapist, that person will be able to give you techniques and tools and skills to be able to go through this. I don't want to say that, like I said, it's important to go talk to your pastor, because reconciliation, right? It's important to get spiritual support from your deacon if you have somebody there who's doing that. But that is a different level and a different kind of support than you would get in professional marital counseling, which you're really going to need to be able to recover from this fully and well. That said, when you say, I don't know what trust would look like, what trust is going to look like is not just saying, my husband isn't doing this anymore. It's going to be more about what your husband is doing. And this is true for recovering from infidelity as well. You know, a lot of times the spouse who has been cheated on, he says, well, how do I know he's not cheating? You know, how do I know he's not viewing pornography again? How do I know he's not calling that woman? How do I know he's not? You know, because you see him putting so much more energy into the relationship with you than he ever has before, that it would be stupid for him to be doing anything else. It just wouldn't make any sense, because you see that his heart and his mind and his time and his effort are so much more dedicated to spending time with you, putting energy into the relationship with you, that it just doesn't compute on any level. You know, because a lot of times people think, well, if he just stops viewing pornography, if he just stops the affair, then we'll go back to the way things were before in the relationship. You know, but that's not good enough, right? Because you thought everything was fine before with the investment of time and energy into the relationship, and this was happening. So you've got to really ramp that up. And again, this is where the rituals of connection come in, making sure that every day you're getting at least 10 minutes each for time to work together on something, you know, putting out the dishes for dinner, cleaning up the dishes after dinner, clean up the family room, whatever, doing some kind of work together on your house, spending time praying together for marital healing and for learning how to love each other better with the love that comes from God's own heart. Even, like I said, 5-10 minutes a day. Taking 10 or 15 minutes to do something fun together, whether that's taking a walk or playing a couple hands of cards, or, you know, just enjoying your time with each other, and taking, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to really talk on a heart-to-heart level, like we were talking about with Margaret earlier in the show, about, you know, how are we taking care of each other today? What's the one thing I really appreciated most about what you did for me today? And all those kinds of things that really enable you to have more meaningful conversations and create that connection that you can look to and say, I can trust him because he's really investing in making this connection happen with me. Right? And the more you're able to do that, the better. Now, I'm going to, in addition to the marriage-friendly counseling, I'm going to also recommend that you check out a program called Reclaim Sexual Health. It's reclaimsexualhealth.com. It is a Catholic online program that supports people in pornography addiction recovery. It also has resources there for spouses. So they're a great organization, reclaimsexualhealth.com. Like you said, a Catholic group that really provides excellent online support for overcoming pornography issues and other related problems. So check that out, Gracie. That plus either the marriagefriendlytherapists.com for local referral, or contacting us through the Pastoral Solutions Institute, and making sure that you're investing in those rituals that will allow you to know that, hey, I really got his heart back. We talk about those rituals and other related ways of rebuilding trust in How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love, which you can pick up at CatholicCounselors.com or EWTN Religious Catalog. Again, that's How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love at CatholicCounselors.com. 877-573-7825. We've been talking about trust throughout the course of the program. And, you know, as we've been discussing this, I want to just sort of leave you with something I shared with the previous caller, that you know whether you can trust somebody based on their ability to display four qualities. You know, that first quality is the ability to follow through on what they say they're going to do. You know, somebody who says, oh, yes, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for you, and then they don't show up for it, you can't trust them because they don't have the ability to follow through. The second quality that trust stands on, integrity. You know, we all hurt each other from time to time, but people with integrity try really hard not to hurt other people in general, and then they're easily corrected if they do hurt you. You know, so if I offend Lisa in some way, you know, and she says, hey, Greg, that really hurt, I'm not going to say, oh, you just need to get a thicker skin, or I was just joking, or you just need to get over yourself. That would say that I don't have integrity, and I'm forcing her to try to drag me through that process of reconciliation. If I have integrity, I say, oh, my gosh, I did not mean to do that. I am so sorry. You know, please forgive me.
Integrity allows us to look at our own faults and address them and try to do better with the grace of God,
instead of being dragged through it, right? So number three, benevolence. You can trust a person who is benevolent. In other words, they're working for your good on a consistent basis, even when it's inconvenient for them to do so. You know, lots of people will work for your good when it's easy, but what about when they're not feeling great? What about when they've got other people demanding things from them? Do they remember you? Or do you just cease to exist because, you know, work, or because kids, or because a million other things that are more important than you? Well, if that's the case, then they don't have benevolence, and you can't trust them. And the last quality, are they consistent? Because you know what? Everybody can do good things once in a while. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. All right? But can you count on this person to consistently demonstrate the ability, integrity, and benevolence to work for your good and do those things that you need to do to be able to trust them? Those are the building blocks of trust. And you know how far you can trust somebody based on the degree to which they display those qualities and the areas in which they display them. Trust isn't a polarized thing that you either have or you don't. You can give it in degrees based on the integrity, benevolence, and ability and consistency that a person displays. That's all the time we've got for our show today. Thanks so much for participating. If there is more that we can do to support you in rebuilding broken trust and knowing who and how to trust again, look us up at CatholicCounselors.com and check out the resources we've mentioned today, including How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love, and God Help Me, These People Are Driving Me Nuts, Making Peace with Difficult People. Learn more about the Pastoral Solutions Institute's telephone counseling practice at the website as well at CatholicCounselors.com, and have a blessed day.
You've been listening to More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck. More to Life is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and is carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Dan McGraw. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.